Blog Talk Radio. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Get Ready with Betty, the radio show that helps you simplify and improve your life by getting things in order physically, psychologically, and spiritually. I'm Sharon McGrill, your host and the owner of the Betty Brigade, an Ann Arbor, Michigan-based company specializing in relocation, organizing, and event planning. So, is there chaos in your life? Is there chaos in your business? Do you know how to deal with the chaos? Do you know how to get past the bureaucracy? Well, our guest today is going to be helping with that. His name is Rich Sheridan, and he is the founder and president of Menlo Innovations, and they happen to be local right here in Ann Arbor. So Rich and I have known each other and sat on boards together for years, and I'm very, very excited to have him on the show today. Let me tell you a little bit about him. So from kid programmer in 1971 to Forbes cover story in 2003, Joy Incorporated author Richard Sheridan, it's funny to call him Richard because I never do, never shied away from challenges, opportunities, or the limelight. And his focus has always been around technology, and his passion is actually process, teamwork, and organizational design with one inordinately popular goal, the business value of joy. Sheridan is an avid reader and historian, and his software design and development team at Menlo Innovations didn't invent a new culture, but copied an old one, Edison's Menlo Park, New Jersey lab, which is the Henry Ford recreated this at Greenfield Village here in Michigan. So if you've ever visited the Detroit area, you can actually go and see the Menlo Park lab as it stands. It's really kind of cool. So some people call it agile and some people call it lean, but Sheridan and his team call it joyful, and it produces results, business and otherwise. Six Incorporated Magazine Revenue Growth Awards, invites to the White House, speaking engagements around the nation, numerous articles and culture awards, and so much interest that they do a tour a day of the Menlo Software Factory. I said that very poorly, but Rich, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Sharon.
Yes, I'm glad you made it on because we were a little concerned about you getting here. So glad you're here.
Yeah, just a little phone number confusion. That's all. No big deal.
Got it. Well, so let's jump right in. So why joy as cultural intention, and how does that translate to business results?
Yeah, you know, obviously, as you know, putting the word joy in a business context is an unusual move, especially in the software industry, where, quite frankly, there's joylessness in a lot of the software industry. That may surprise some people until I remind them of how painful the launch of healthcare.gov was. Or some of the, you know, headlines in the Wall Street Journal about where software projects have gone horribly wrong and created great gaping security holes for corporations or cost them millions of dollars because of missed expectations. And so we didn't want that. I didn't want that personally in my careers as a programmer. I can tell you there's a tremendous amount of joy when the work of your heart, your hands, and your mind get out into the world and delight people for whom it's intended. But most of us in the industry have had been denied that opportunity for a good portion of our careers. And quite frankly, we became somewhat of a refugee camp from an industry going off in the wrong direction. So we chose to singularly focus our culture on what we call the business value of joy. And for us, it's very tangibly defined. This is not some namby-pamby People's Republic of Ann Arbor style joy. This is serious business joy, because what we want more than anything else is that work we do in the room gets out in the world, gets delivered, and delights the people for whom it's intended. And that is our definition of joy, that somebody stops us later on the sidewalk and says, really, you did that? I love that software. And quite frankly, if we're all honest with ourselves, there are very few pieces of software we use in our daily lives where we could ever say, I love that software.
I think that's very, very true. And translating it into tangible results is also something that a lot of business owners don't always do. The numbers are tangible, and there are certain aspects you can measure things, but people don't always measure intangibles. And one of the things that we do here at Betty Brigade is we measure the mood of the staff, and it gives us kind of a barometer so that we can look at weekly how's the morale, and really look right up at the top line of the cash flow, and then look at the mood line and say, oh, how does that correlate?
Yeah, because I know with the kind of work you do, it's a very high touch kind of work. You're interacting with people out in the world, and if you're sending demoralized, unhappy people out into the world, that's going to show in the business results.
Well, and it probably shows in programming as well.
Absolutely. It's funny, when I started, we do these tours. We now are up to 1 to 3 tours a day now. We had over 3,000 people come from around the world last year alone to visit. And when people come through now, I say to them, welcome to Menlo. This place has got an intentional culture focused on the business value of joy. Well, some people stop me at that point and they say, Rich, why are you talking about joy? And I point back to the room full of people. I said, let's say you were bringing a project here that we were going to build for you. Let's say half of my team had joy and the other half didn't. Which half would you want working on your project? And they look at me and they're like, well, we'd want the joyful half, of course. I said, why? What difference would it make? Why would you care? And all of a sudden they say all the business value things. They'd be more productive. They'd create better quality. They'd care more about the outcome. They'd want to see their work out in the world. They would be easier to work with is one of the most common things I hear. So I looked at them and said, okay, there is, in fact, tangible business value to joy. And then I talked about that external focus of our organization.
Well, and people don't, it's interesting because it's coming back around that people are really looking at the intangibles of what makes business run and making the staff happy and making the clients happy. Mm-hmm. You always want to make the clients happy, but sometimes making the staff happy isn't at the top of the list. But when it is, it changes the whole culture.
Yeah, and we actually even distinguish between joy and happiness because I don't believe, your work or mine, there is no way to be happy every minute of every day because the work we do is hard. It's exacting.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? And so you can't be happy every minute of every day because that would be unnatural. It would probably require some high forms of prescription medication, and that's not what we're seeking. We're looking for that long-term outcome. How do we get to that joyful outcome that's meaningful and purposeful? And should there be happiness and fun in the room? Of course. I don't believe for a second you can create joyful outcomes for the world without joy in the room as well. But if we're going through those tough times, if we're working on the hard stuff and we're beating our heads against the wall and we're arguing even with our customers about what's the right thing to do, if we poke our heads up and look at the joy, the long-term joy outcome we're trying to produce, it helps you get through those tougher times where maybe you're not happy, maybe you're actually upset, maybe angry even at times because you're so focused on the goal. And that's really the key, I think, to thinking about joy in a business context. Much the same way, let's face it, if any of us have raised children, there's a lot of joy in raising children, and we all know it's not happiness every minute of every day, even when we have really good kids.
Absolutely. And that's a whole nother show.
There you go.
So I want to tell our listeners a little bit about your space. So you work in, it's cavernous. It's a cavernous space that's
yes.
All open. You've got very tall ceilings, and it is very interesting when you first walk in because you come down the escalator and there's this big open space. And so let's talk about the open space philosophy and how that's a catalyst for creativity and success in your model.
When people come on the tours and they're confronted with this wide open space. I often say, yeah, look, this, we have one of those vilified open office environments you've read articles about, the ones that Fast Company said were born in the mind of Satan in the deepest caverns of hell, where they have psychologists that have proven this kind of space doesn't work, for especially for introverted programmers who need library quiet. And they look at me, and people send me those articles and say, Rich, why does this seemingly work for a memo but nowhere else? And I tell them it's very simple. You see, we didn't build an open and collaborative workspace. We built an open and collaborative culture, and we fit our workspace to a culture. And I think you always have to start with the people and then start fitting everything to your cultural intentions. So when you come in, there's a number of things you'll notice. Number one, we want openness and transparency. So we knock down all the barriers to human communication. There are no walls, offices, cubes, or doors. I sit right out in the room with everybody else. I had to find a quiet area just to get away from the noise so you wouldn't be hearing in the background of this conversation. I'm actually in, we can maybe talk about this in the role it plays in Joy. I'm in the baby's room. We let moms bring in their babies to work. So I'm in the room where moms take care of the babies, and dads too for that matter. But that might be a different show or something. But but in any event, the openness, the transparency, and the flexibility of the space. We have pull-downs from the ceiling, lightweight aluminum tables. The team has full control of the space. If they want to change something, they just change it. They don't have to ask permission. There's no rules. There's no bureaucracy. There's no police around the space. There's no facilities person. They just change the space however they need it. All of this starts to feed a human energy in the room that leads to people feeling safe, to trusting one another, to creativity, collaboration, innovation, and invention.
Well, you know, I have to tell you that Betty Brigade actually took a page out of the Menlo Handbook of letting babies come to work, because we have
awesome.
we have a Betty that just gave birth 2 weeks ago, so she's still on maternity leave, but I let her know that when she's ready to come back that she can absolutely bring baby with her. And
awesome.
And then we have another person who is about to give birth in about 6 weeks, and that same thing is, so we're going to have two babies in the office, and it'll be very interesting because that's going to really change our environment.
Water in the other. We have five Menlo babies in process right now.
Wow! Yes, it must be in the Ann Arbor water. So if you're looking to get pregnant, you know where to go.
There's
two things that happened in 2001: the dot-com bubble burst, and Menlo Innovations was founded. Can you talk about the creation and why? Why you did it, and you know, what market did you see? How did all this develop?
Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of deeper background on me so you know where this kind of came from. I started out programming computers when I was just a kid in 1971. I was a 13-year-old freshman in high school north of Detroit in Macomb County, and I fell in love with computers at that point and eventually launched a career after graduating from Michigan with a couple of degrees. And very quickly, the little kid joy of our industry wore off, and I found myself in this death march culture of nights, weekends away from family, working on projects that would ultimately be canceled. And I thought, man, maybe I chose wrong. I thought this was going to be a great career, and it turned out it wasn't. But in the midst of all that turmoil, I channeled my inner optimist. I found myself in this room full of manure. I was going to find a pony in here somewhere. And so I began reading organizational design books to get out of the quagmire I was in. And ultimately, by the time I became vice president of Interface Systems on the west side of Ann Arbor, I was ready. And within 2 years, between 1999 and 2001, I transformed that tired 30-year-old public company into something that looked like Menlo. And I probably would still be there today had the dot-com bubble not burst in 2001, and the California company that had purchased us shuttered every remote office they had, including mine. The people who made that decision never came to visit what I had created there. And so they took away my job, my title, my paycheck, my stock options. They took away everything they could in that moment except for one thing. They couldn't take away what I had learned in those 2 years. And so in that moment, I went home to my wife and I said, honey, I laid off my team today and they don't need a VP anymore, so I'm out of work. And she looked at me, she says, you're unemployed? And I said, no, honey, I'm an entrepreneur now. And, you know, my eternal optimist, right? And so that was the moment where we said, hey, look, we discovered some sort of nuclear fusion for teamwork at Interface Systems. And my co-founders and I that had been a part of that decided we could do it again, that the world was yearning for a better culture for doing what we did as a profession. And it turns out the world is yearning for better cultures in almost every profession. And so not only did we create this software design and development firm that does contract software design and development for our clients, but we opened our doors to the world and we said, if you are interested in how we do what we do, come visit. And people took us up on it. And as I said, last year we had over 3,000 visitors come from around the world to visit the basement of a parking structure in downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Well, it really is a fantastic space, and I would strongly encourage you all to visit Menlo Innovations if you do come to Southeast Michigan, because it's definitely worth a trip, and Ann Arbor is definitely worth a trip if you like restaurants. We are talking with Rich Sheridan, founder and head joy guy. Do you have a title like that?
No, my favorite title is Chief Storyteller.
Chief Storyteller. All right. We're talking to Chief Storyteller Rich Sheridan from Menlo Innovations. If you want to find out more, you can go to their website, which is menloinnovations.com. You can also find them on Facebook and on Twitter. Rich is at Menlo Prez, P-R-E-Z. We are going to take a very quick break, and we will be right back to hear more about culture and innovation at Menlo Innovations.
You are listening to Get Ready with Betty, the radio show that helps clear the confusion and simplify your life. I'm your host, Sharon McCrill, owner of the Betty Brigade, an Ann Arbor, Michigan-based company specializing in relocation, organizing, and event planning. On Get Ready with Betty, we talk with experts in a wide variety of fields who can break down what seems complicated into simple, doable steps. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to Get Ready with Betty. Again, we are talking with Rich Sheridan, who is in charge of joy and Viking hats. We're going to talk about Viking hats, Rich. So where did the Viking hats come from? Because if you go to Menlo, there are Viking hats kind of all over the place. So where did that come from?
Yeah, it's typical of Menlo. We sort of have this whimsical irreverence about standard corporate practice, and I think the Viking helmet is one of the best expressions of that. We have this meeting every day, Sharon, that's called by an alarm clock buried inside of a dartboard. Now, why a dartboard needs an alarm clock, I have no idea, but given it was programmable, we programmed it to go off at 10 o'clock every morning. So 10 o'clock every morning, the sound goes off, bong, 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 and that's our call to everybody get up in the room. There can be 50, 60, 70 people. We all gather in a circle. And if you've never been to Menlo before, you're going to start to get a sense, oh, this might be a cult thing going on here. They're going to hold hands and sing songs or something like that. But what happens during this daily stand-up meeting, as we call it, is everybody gets a chance to report out who they are, what they're working on, where they're having trouble, where they might need help, and any other general announcements. Well, one way to keep a daily stand-up meeting on task is to have a talking stick. And so we used a lot of different kinds of things in the earliest days, but one day somebody had brought in a Viking helmet, and it was just sitting on the table. And one thing about our culture that makes us fun and unusual is we work in pairs. Everybody works two to a computer. We assign the pairs, and we switch them every 5 working days. Well, so when we work in pairs, we report out and stand up at pairs. And when somebody that day 10 years ago saw the Viking helmet, they said, oh, this is the perfect talking stick for our stand-up meeting because it has 2 horns. So they grabbed it, and one pair partner held one horn while the other pair partner held the other one. They introduced themselves, reported out, and everybody got it. And that became the standard talking stick for our daily stand-up meeting, and ultimately it became the iconic symbol of Menlo, and everybody gloms onto the Viking helmet, and people gift us Viking helmets now. They find them in unusual places, and they send them to us in a box. We have all kinds of different kinds of Viking helmets here now, but that's really the story behind it. Is it's a very practical tool to keep a meeting on task, but it also expresses our attitude towards standard business practices. Let's choose to have fun wherever we can. If we can choose between boring and fun, we'll always choose fun.
I think that that's a great attitude, and I did not know the story behind the Viking helmet, so thank you for sharing that because, again, we've known each other for years, and I've been to your business many times, but I didn't know that story. So let's talk about why Menlo is bossless but not leaderless, and I love that because that's something that we do here at Betty Brigade, too.
Yeah, we teach classes in our methodology. People can come here and take a deep dive. They can spend anywhere from 2 hours to 5 days here. We've got a whole group here from Texas, and they're here for 2 days, the executives from this group, and they learn about our culture. One time we were teaching a class, and somebody had asked this question I'd never had before, and that's unusual, actually. I'm usually like used to all the questions that people ask, and they said, Rich, who do people report to here? And, you know, of course, he was coming from a big insurance company, and he figured that was a natural question. And I looked at him, I said, wow, Cam, that's really cool. No one's ever asked me that question before. He said, hold on a second. And he didn't know what I was delaying, but we teach the class right in our space so they can see the culture at work right in front of them while they're learning. And I grabbed five of my team members and pulled them over, and I said, Cam, ask them your question. I can't wait to hear their answer. And he's looking at me like, answer the question, Rich. And so I asked them, and so he looks at them and says, well, who do you report to here? Oh, the look on their face, they looked up, they looked around, they talked about the clients, the process, all this sort of thing. Finally, the coolest thing ever, they pointed to each other. And I said, Cam, you see, we're a team. We don't need bosses. We don't need hierarchy. We need teamwork. We don't have reporting relationships here. He refused to accept that. So he said, well, when people hire in here, who makes the hiring decisions? And the team looked at him and said, we do. He said, Cam, we pair with each other. We wouldn't trust Rich to make the hiring decisions. He doesn't have to work side by side with another person for 40 hours. We make the decision. He said, okay, but what about promotions? Who makes that decision? They said, we do. All promotions are peer-led. We make the decision whether that person moves up. Quite frankly, you make the decision if the person moves out. I might get managerially involved in that process, but I'm not making the decision. You see, if you create the right kind of culture...
Yeah, and that takes a tremendous amount of pressure off you as the bosses because you're not having to determine whether or not that staff member is ready.
Right. And who better, especially in our environment, this open and collaborative work environment where people are working shoulder to shoulder, who better would have insight in how that person is doing than your peers?
Absolutely. So if what we're talking about is culture, and we're talking about how Menlo Innovations does it. They are based here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Rich has a new book out. It's called Joy, Inc., How We Built a Workplace People Love, and you can find it on Amazon and probably all different other places. Tell some people besides Amazon, where can you find the book?
Anywhere books, you can find books, especially online, you can find Joy, Inc. in every form you want. It's Kindle and audio and Russian and Korean. You can get four language versions of it now. It's also out in paperback and hardcover. So, yes, and I think because the paperback just came out a month ago, you may even find it in bookstores around the country as well. It's available in all forms that you can imagine.
So what are some of the things that I as a business leader, I want to learn from Menlo, but maybe I don't want to take the time to come to Ann Arbor. Would the book be a good first start?
Absolutely. Yeah, I get tremendous feedback from around the world now about the book and how it's actually changed lives, and people write me their stories about what things they've done just since reading the book. So that's very gratifying for me to know, because we knew, given the thousands of people who come here every year to visit, we knew it was time to share the story with the world in a different way, and that's really how the book came to be.
Well, that's terrific. And, you know, I have just started it, but I'm not deep into it, so I'm very excited to read the rest of it. So let's talk about how can people learn more about Menlo? Do you offer training on your process? You've talked a little bit about how people come, but is there a special place? Can they go to Menlo Innovations and go to training?
Yep, there's on the front page of our website, there's an Experience Menlo tab that says Experience Menlo by visiting and by reading. And there's one other tab. I can't remember what the third one is. But we have a tremendous amount of giveaway information right on our website. And obviously the book is there as well. We have a blog that you can read about. So there's a lot of ways if you're on a lower or near zero budget, there's lots of ways to learn about us. If you simply Google Sheridan Menlo Joy, you will get videos. I mean, I can't even remember making all these videos, but there's just videos galore out there of talks I've given, of interviews I've done, of webinars I've done, that sort of thing. So there's lots of stuff online that you can use to learn about us if you can't get here. If you're thinking about coming, you can experience Menlo by visiting, and there's lots of options there. We even have a free tour every month for people who can't afford to pay for a tour. We have some very low-cost tours. And then for the people who are really serious, they send their teams here from anywhere to 1 to 5 days. We have public classes we offer once a quarter, and then private classes are running almost every day. I had to step away from one of the private classes I was leading just to be part of this interview. And so that's a very common practice for us. We actually earn about 10% of our annual revenues just from teaching our process to others. So it's a very important part of our business, but it's part of our philosophy. We decided at the very beginning we were not going to keep anything we learned a secret from the world. We were going to just share it with the world in whatever way we could.
That's a great way. And we have recently been doing that. So in the last 5 years of business, that's something that Betty Brigade has really adopted. We've done a bunch of training through Zingerman's and they've really taught us how the open book management system and we've read The Great Game of Business as a team and just doing different things to show the staff that they are as much about the process as I am as the founder. That I can't continue without them, and they, you know, yes, of course they need a job. Everybody, you know, needs a job at some point. But that really the mission of the company is to create peace and serenity around relocation, and that's a whole different avenue. You know, it's not about sales.
Zingerman's has a great attitude about their staff. They refer to their staff as volunteers. And obviously they're paid volunteers, but the fact of the matter is if we all look at the people who walk in our door every day, workforce, as being there voluntarily because they are, we start to take a different attitude. Our job as leaders is to inspire the team members who work for us, to give them a vision that fits for their lives. Because I think everybody's looking for purpose and meaning in their work. And if you don't find it, sure, you'll keep coming to work, but now you're not bringing your whole self. You're not bringing your spirit, your energy. You're not bringing your brain. You're leaving it at home on the pillow. And at that point, you know, having a disengaged workforce is incredibly costly because you just don't care about the outcomes. But if we can tap into that energy, if we can inspire them, if we can get them wanting, believing to the point where when they walk in your door every day, they want that place they work to live to see another day. That's an incredibly powerful force.
It absolutely is. And I just want to thank you for being on the show and thank you for stepping out of your training today. Please thank your students for me because I really appreciate you being on the show today.
Oh, I left them in good hands with a couple of our high-tech anthropologists, so they're being well taken care of.
And if you want, well, I'm sure they are. If you want to know more about Rich Sheridan, again, he said Google Sheridan Menlo Joy. Was that it?
Yep.
And
that'll be
you
it.
Can also,
if you put those three words in, you'll get all kinds of stuff about us.
And also you can go to menloinnovations.com. You can also follow them on Facebook. Twitter is @MenloPrez, and you can follow Rich. It's MENLOPREZ. Or you can pick up Joy, Inc. At Amazon and all bookstores now in paperback. So thank you again for being on the show. And this has been another episode of Get Ready with Betty, the radio show that helps you simplify your life and clear the confusion. Thank you again for our listeners today. And we'll be back next week with Judy Van Niekerk, who will be talking about self-love and overcoming your challenges in life. And this lady was seriously abused by her father for years. So until next time, keep it simple. And thanks for being with us.